NTJ Morning Magazine is continuing now. Good morning to you. I'm Rick Shepherd, and on the studio line with me this morning is James Hopkins, who is author of The Training Physical, Diagnose, Treat, and Cure Your Training Departments. Jim, thank you very much for being on the program with us today.
Hey, my pleasure.
Your new book, and I guess I can say your life's work, is based on the idea that as human beings, we need to have a physical every once in a while. We correct existing problems. We get early treatment for what could be a future problem. So you're saying that our businesses, training organizations, also need to get a physical. Does that kind of wrap it up?
Yeah. I originally was calling it an audit, and I got so many sour-looking faces that one day when I was trying to describe the process to somebody, I said, well, it's kind of like, you know, you go to your doctor every year and you get a physical. And the word physical kind of stuck at that point, because instantly I had somebody that understood not only the evaluation process, but the need to actually fix you up and make you better.
There are probably still people that don't like the idea of having a physical at their regular doctor, but it's not as unpleasant sounding as audit, or I think in the book you said you used review there for a while. So I like the idea of the physical. And if you continue that comparison, one of the things you bring out in the book is that just like most doctors would not generally recommend you try to self-diagnose yourself and maybe self-treat your own problems, you really ought to go to a professional doctor and get that physical done. In the same way, you recommend that when it comes to businesses training departments, they have to look beyond themselves, right? They got to go to an outside source to come in and look and see what's happening in their training department.
Right. And like most companies, there is an internal audit department that is like a third party. They're not involved in a particular line of business. But the training function is so unique that most audit departments are not really aware of what they're looking for beyond maybe financials. So this is where I try to recommend that, you know, when you self-diagnose yourself, you take a deep breath and you say, I feel great, you know, so there must not be anything wrong with me. Whereas bringing a third-party consultant like myself into the process, you know, we've got nothing to gain or lose by looking at what's working and what's not working and reporting it, you know, as it is.
Now, I was surprised to learn when I was reading your book that many training departments are basically in charge of maybe securing the room and making sure coffee and donuts are there and making sure that you clean up afterwards. And when you look at all of those things, as important as they are in a certain capacity, that doesn't have anything to do with training, right?
Right. Well, and that's the problem when our training folks, especially the managers, are not really well enough versed into what is their purpose within an organization. And it gets a little slow because an order, I always say, you know, the training manager that's waiting around to take somebody's order and go fulfill it, oh, they need a class on blank, and they run out and get it. If the orders are slow, then they start raising their hand to anything and everything to look busy and to remain helpful. And therefore, they land up volunteering for stuff that is, yes, physically something they can do, but it's probably not the best use of their time or the money that's being spent on their salaries and everything else that goes into training.
What I'm trying
to encourage them to do is to, you know, do what you're supposed to be working on. Stay busy that way.
What would you say to a company, and I know in the book you mentioned that this has happened to you, when you walk into a company and you asked to get information about their training program, they just kind of give you a funny look, like information or maybe even what training program or something like that. What do you say when a company seems to have nothing at all?
Well, if I'm engaging with them on an audit, that is a big red flag. If they don't have a training plan, in other words, what are our goals and objectives this year? What are we trying to prepare our employees to be able to perform and accomplish so that the company meets its goals? Then what I realize is it's a completely reactive training organization. And don't get me wrong, training needs to kind of walk that line between being proactive, preparing people in advance for things, and then sometimes things just come in at them, and they need to be able to spin around and solve those issues too. So it's a real balancing line. But if you don't have a plan in place, then you really are just reactive. You're waiting for the next thing to happen.
something else you brought up in the book I liked was the idea that if you don't have a plan, then you end up being the department that just gets stuff added on to. It's kind of like, well, we need somebody to do this. Well, you know, let's have the training department people do it. And you end up, you know, with a department that's doing all kinds of things that are, again, not related to training, right?
Right. And it's to fill in time. I call them the party planners. You know, a good trainer knows how to set up a room so that the meeting is, or the training session is, going to be engaging and people are facing the right direction and you don't have your facilitator standing in front of a screen or something like that. And yes, that's a skill that we come to the table with. But what I would always encourage a training department to do is say, instead of you being the one that's always setting up and taking down, why don't you teach others how to do it? Since our primary role is training, then lead others and, you know, share the wealth of knowledge on how to set up a room. Most of us know how to, you know, place the food out or clean up. But, I mean, the other kind of stuff, it looks like busy work if you're not, you know, really performing the skills you should be doing within the organization.
You have a section in the book in which you ask the reader to list skill developments that are crucial to their organization. And you say, okay, just stop. Don't do anything else. Just make the list. And then you ask them to compare what they wrote to what you wrote. Now, as an outside professional and somebody who's been doing this for decades now, I would assume you have a pretty complete list here. I was amazed to see some things which I wouldn't expect to see on your list. You have things, for example, like interpersonal, verbal, and written communications. Are there really organizations that need to have training sessions to get people to understand how to communicate better?
Well, in yes, across the board. Let's start with written skills. The type of writing we're taught in school is not the types of communications that we're expected to perform within an organization. You write a term paper in school, you need to learn how to write a proposal within a business environment. Emails, for example, can be extremely offensive if not written correctly. So there is a certain amount of animosities that can be created with a poor written communication. Interpersonal communications verbally, every human being can be a student of that, getting better at learning how to communicate and working with each other. And as our organizations become flatter and there's less hierarchy, we have to learn to work with people on our same peer group, people that report up through us, and people that we report up to. So there is a real art, if you will, in that kind of communication. So yeah, I encourage a lot of that. When it comes to that skill list, I think what happens is that unless we focus outside the nine dots and say, you know, what is it that we should be trying to build within our employees that they didn't arrive with or come by naturally, we need to get past the, I think I refer to it in the book as the gotta do's, or the have to do's, which is compliance, the types of things that keep us, with the doors open. But the other types of skills, management, leadership, development, and just bear with me here. One of the things that by developing those skills, you're sending a signal that we plan to be around for a while because we need to be here longer than just this month or this year. So we're sending a signal that we're trying to develop for the future. If we ignore those skills, then we're sending the same a signal that says, you know, we're just hanging in there until we're able to sell off or somebody buys us, type of thing. So, but when I create the list, and it was, I'll tell you, a real challenge just to get it on the opposite page of the book when we were laying out the book, was I didn't want to reveal that too quickly. I wanted them to kind of work a list themselves and see, what are you training? Because I find more and more that I'll say, what kind of skills are you looking at? Oh, and, you know, they'll try to look up at the ceiling of their office. And I'll say, no, where's the list? Because unless you've got something to focus on, other things get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
when you look at that issue of interpersonal communication in particular, are there diversity issues that are coming into play more and more in our society? Not only men knowing how to speak to women and women knowing how to speak to men, but people learning how to speak amongst themselves when there are minorities in the workplace now more than there might have been in the past. Are those issues as well?
Well, diversity training is a key feature of interpersonal communication, but I don't think it focuses on the types of things that I'm talking about in interpersonal. I think you need to value diversity, and I think you need to see that no matter what race, gender, age, or anything else that's in your workplace, that they bring value to the table. But you also need to be sensitive to the types of jargon you might use, the expectations that everybody understands technology, that everybody moves at the same pace you do. When you're working within an organization, I work a lot with social style training, which basically talks about how we make decisions, how we process information. And within that environment, you know, we may be very goal-oriented, we may be very black and white, we may be very expressive and thinking always outside the... And you need to be able to say, okay, just because I process work this way doesn't mean everybody does. And to be respectful and to actually be able to communicate and get more things done, it's getting to know your fellow workers and, you know, what are their needs and how can I help them meet those needs. And if they're doing the same thing, it's kind of like meeting in the middle. So,
one of the other issues you brought out, something that I had never thought about, but it was dealing with technology in the workplace and taking a making an analysis of that and making sure we are using the technology that we have available to us before we sign up for another year of it, or before we get all excited about some other program that might come down and look appealing to us and the company spends money on it and then we really don't use it. So that's a key part of what you do as well, right? You want to know what kind of technology is currently being used in that business and if it's being used to its fullest before you move on to something else, right?
Right, right. Well, and this is something we all struggle with in our environments. We buy some software, and we even do this at home. You know, you buy something like Outlook, and you know the basics, but you're all ready to take on maybe the latest and greatest version because you heard of another bell or whistle that is in that without stopping to say, well, can I do that now? And when it comes to learning management systems, as an example, within training, there are constant upgrades. And I think what is important is to say, do I need to sign up for every upgrade? Because that's money. That costs money. And it involves extra time, maybe training people or implementing the system and that kind of stuff. You know, what's involved in this? Will I use the features? And at the same time, we work with organizations that are looking to implement for the first time one of these technologies. And it's important, again, that they say, well, what am I going to use it for now and in the future? And if the future is literally 2 years out, then you don't need to buy that now. You're not going to be using it. Upgrade later type of thing. So I'm a very cost conscious. That's my banking background, is to keep costs under control and look at, you know, again, identifying exactly what you want, therefore then go shopping afterwards. And there's probably a large section in the book about my aggravation about anybody that goes shopping for a solution before they even know what it's supposed to do. So
let's talk a little bit about what kind of person ought to be in a training department. And the one word that I think of after reading your book would be the word passion. You want someone who is passionate about training, about learning, to be the person in charge of a training department at any organization, right?
Yes. And that's because most people that are in the learning field, I call it heart. It's great that you have a subject matter expert as far as content is concerned, but if you don't have the desire to help other people learn it, and that includes patience, the ability to explain yourselves 20 different ways sometimes, it's really difficult to add the value you need to within the organization. Passion around learning means I'm constantly learning. I am never done learning. And I've likened training sometimes to the art of, or the craft of acting, is that most actors, no matter how accomplished they are, they're always looking for something else to stretch themselves to. And now I'm going to go on Broadway, or now I'm going to go back to a TV series or something like that. In the training world, to be truly passionate, you're constantly learning some new skill yourself, encouraging it within your staff, and looking for a way that the organization is constantly growing. And so that is prevalent in the training people that I've ran across over the last 20 years that are really good. And they're humble about their goodness, and they're very willing to get constructive feedback or open up the door to a possibility of doing something different. So, yeah, it's an interesting breed, and I've always, when I've encouraged new people to try training for the first time, I'll say, you know, in 6 months, you'll either never want to leave, you've found a new home, or you're going to go running out the door and never want to look back, because that's the passion test. Can I do this?
Let's send a bit of a challenge out to our listeners right now, and I'll see if you agree with this. Anybody who is part of a business or an organization, certainly one large enough to have a training department, think about that department for a moment right now and what kind of health the training department is. And I believe you would say that the degree of health that that training department has directly reflects the health of the overall organization. And if you don't have a good training department, you don't have a good overall organization, or at least it's not certainly as good as it could be. Is that a fair statement to make?
Right, right. Because any organization out there employs human beings, and human beings are being asked to do different things all the time. And sometimes it's just under greater stress, or we're going to change a process again. And sometimes we need to be able to say, you know, are they up to it? And if not, then the training department needs to be able to step in and provide them with those skills. A training department that is unhealthy, and that's, you know, down to the one-person training department that literally a lot of companies have, or the HR manager is also the training manager. It's still a training function within the organization, and they need to be able to say, how do I provide the value this organization needs? We employ human beings. They have to be able to perform at the right levels so that we're not constantly, you know, letting people go and recruiting new people, which is a terrible revolving door.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with James Hopkins. He has written the book, The Training Physical, Diagnose, Treat, and Cure Your Training Department. Jim, I assume the book is available about anywhere these days? People can go online and find the book?
Right, right. And if they just want more information about the book, they can go to my website is thetrainingphysical.com. And then there's a section on ordering the book, and I encourage them to, you know, use Amazon or Borders or Barnes & Noble or Author House, which is the publisher. So they can pretty much get the book anywhere nowadays.
Once again, James Hopkins, The Training Physical, Diagnose, Treat, and Cure Your Training Department. Jim, thank you very much for a great book, and thanks for your time on the program today.
Hey, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.